You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Well, many of you have been waiting for this for quite a while. Jeff Hawkins, former Scientologist leader, is about to join us on the show. He spent 35 years working for the Church of Scientology all over the world and at all echelons, including the top level at the Scientology International Base in Hemet, California. He left Scientology 3 years ago and really has no further connection to corporate Scientology. He's now kind of focusing his efforts in exposing, you know, apparent incongruencies within the organization. Counterfeitdreams.blogspot.com is the website you want to go to. Counterfeitdreams.blogspot.com. And Jeff joins us today. What happened at 21 that got you signing the million-year contract?
I was living in California. I was part of, I guess, what you'd call the counterculture. Very much looking for, I guess you'd say, spiritual answers, that sort of thing. And some friends of mine got connected up with Scientology, and they started telling me about it, and it sounded pretty amazing. It was supposed to be a scientific approach to spirituality, and they supposedly had some ways of getting rid of the things that would inhibit a person spiritually and that sort of thing. And I was searching around, so I thought I'd give it a try, and got involved with it.
Of course, as a 21-year-old, the prospect of traveling to Edinburgh and Copenhagen and even getting on the cruise ship, the Apollo, I mean, all this stuff kind of, that would turn any 20-year-old male's crank.
Oh, yeah, it was very exciting. You know, there are some kind of bizarre things about Scientology. They deal in past lives and kind of space opera scenarios. And like you say, to a 21-year-old, that was very wild and wonderful, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Now, I understand in 75, you kind of got a chance to hang around L. Ron Hubbard, but you didn't actually work that closely with him, though.
I was working with him on some projects, but we never had face-to-face meetings. It was always through messengers who would come rushing down with instructions back and forth. But on that basis, I worked with him for a couple of months on some projects.
Right. When did he pass?
86.
86, okay. When he died in 86, what's the first thing? As soon as you found out that news, what went through your head?
Well, I was saddened. I mean, the man was, you know, I respected him very much at that time because I was involved in Scientology.
Right.
And he was like the leader, you know, the founder and so forth. So I was saddened by it. They had a big event in L.A., and they said, well, he's passed on to a higher realm and so forth, and therefore we shouldn't be sad. We should be, you know, rejoice sort of that he's passed on voluntarily, they said, to a higher realm to continue his research, you know. So we were kind of said, well, don't feel sad, you know, but I kind of felt sad anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Now, controversy still surrounds this man, though. There have been numerous stories and reports on a variety of questionable conduct that kind of followed this man around. I guess none of them can really be verified by you, correct?
No. There's a lot of material on the Internet about the man. You know, my personal knowledge of him is fairly limited, and of course, as an insider in Scientology, you are kind of shielded from all of the controversial or negative stuff about him that's
right
on the Internet or that's out there in books.
All right, so here we are. You're a young guy. You're living the counterculture thing. A couple of your buddies go, hey, you got to check this thing out, the Scientology stuff. You look into it. Sounds like a rush. Of course, it feeds into what you're all about as well vocationally, because were you not into sort of, you know, marketing and advertising and...
I was a graphic designer at the time. I didn't get into marketing until I got involved with the church, but I was mainly a graphic designer, artist, illustrator, and so forth.
Okay.
And I got involved in the promotional end of things simply because I could put a design together.
And then you kind of worked your way up the ranks? Is that how it goes?
I pretty much stayed in the marketing publishing arena and kind of worked myself up the ranks. I was head of the publications organization over in Copenhagen for a while. And then after that, went to the ship and became a part of the marketing bureau, which was pretty much where I stayed.
Okay, you know, one thing I got to throw out there right off the bat is, obviously, you're getting another call, are you?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, I don't know where that's coming from. That's kind of an odd signal. Anyway, maybe that's Elrond trying to touch base with us here.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah, I want to make something very clear to everybody. You are not one of these raving evangelicals who used to be a Scientologist and now you're just out there to destroy them.
No, I'm not. I don't have anything against the average Scientologist who is pursuing studies in Scientology or anything like that. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, people can believe whatever they want to believe, and I can't condemn them for it because I believed in that stuff for over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
What I do object to is the secrecy and the abuses that occur at the upper levels of Scientology that the average Scientologist doesn't know anything about. And this, I think, should be exposed, and I think that the rank and file of Scientology, who are basically good people, should be aware that their leadership is very, very corrupt and abusive.
So what you're running up the flagpole, then, is for all the cronies who are down in the lower levels, here's your wake-up call. For someone like me who's hung around the big kahunas for 30 years or whatever it is, stuff is not as it seems.
That's right. That's right.
For example, the censorship of your private life was horrendous.
Yeah. When I was in the Sea organization and at the international base, all of our letters were read before they got to us. And if there was anything wrong with the content of it, then we were hauled in and interviewed about it. And, of course, all of our letters out were censored, and we couldn't communicate anything negative that was going on within the organization. Same with phone calls. All phone calls with family had, they had a person monitoring the call.
Okay, so hold on. Right off the bat, though, Jeff, I would say to you, once those rules start getting shoved down your throat, why didn't you bail? Because is that not a huge indicator that you're into something wacky?
It is. It is. You know, and this is a thought process that I've gone through many times, like, why did I stay so long? You have to understand that if you're a true believer in Scientology, you think, like with a lot of religions, you think that your only way to spiritual salvation is by following the steps that they lay out.
Right.
If you walk out, or if you object, or if you make a fuss, you are just cut off from that salvation. What you believe at that time is your ultimate spiritual salvation. You're also cut off from your friends, your family, if they're Scientologists, your whole life. And if you understand, 30 years of my life was invested in this group.
So bailing would not be easy.
Bailing was not easy.
No.
You know, it was not easy at all. I had to divorce my wife, turn my back on all of my friends, turn my back on the organization I worked for 30 years, and start a new life and a new career in a strange town at 58 years old.
So that's actually what happened? You actually divorced your wife as well?
Oh, yeah. I was made to. She was staying, and I was leaving.
Oh, wow.
So I was presented with the divorce papers as a fait accompli, you know.
And do you have children, Jeff?
I do. I have a wonderful daughter, lives in San Francisco, from my first wife.
Okay.
And she has kids, grandkids. I see them all the time now.
Right. What's their attrition rate? I know their recruiting methods are fast and furious, but how many drop out the back door?
Oh, like 90%.
It is. So it's a 90% attrition rate. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's even worse than the Baptists.
It is. And they're also have been declining as an organization since 1991, and I've seen the actual statistics when I was a part of the organization, and up to 3 years ago when I left, they had been declining steeply since 1991.
Despite all the celebrity attachment?
Oh, yeah.
Because I opened the phone lines to some of our listeners, and the first caller said, what is it about the whole Scientology thing that appeals to movie stars? Let me see if I can answer this before you answer it, if you don't mind.
Sure, sure.
There really aren't that many celebrities that have attached themselves to Scientology, especially as compared to how many supposed Christian celebrities there are.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it hits the news because of the secrecy and weirdness of Scientology and the appeal of these particular celebrities. That's it.
Right, right. Well, and they are very much coddled by the Church of Scientology.
Oh, they are.
Oh, they are very, very coddled. And they are protected from knowing any of the stuff that I'm talking about. They are like your rank-and-file Scientologists. They know nothing of what goes on at the upper level.
But didn't Mr. Cruz get some, you know, medallion around his neck and become some high-order Scientologist?
That was really an award for his efforts in promoting Scientology. He has never been a part of the management structure.
Okay, so he's never hung out in Hemet, California.
Oh, he has. He has. But again, he was coddled while he was there.
Right.
He was getting training, and he was getting the auditing, counseling, and so forth, and he was very much coddled and protected and so forth while he was there. He didn't mingle with the rank and file, believe me.
No, so you and Mr. Travolta didn't practice dance moves or anything, right?
No, exactly.
All right, just checking.
Yeah.
All right, again, folks, you're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, speaking with Jeff Hawkins, former Scientologist leader, 35 years working for the Church of Scientology, and left 3 years ago. So I've got to ask you this. Maybe you are just some embittered, you know, jerk who really has it in for Scientology because somebody hurt your feelings over there.
Yeah. And that's what they'll tell you. They'll say, "Well, I'm just an apostate member who is bitter and therefore trying to bring down the church and so
right.
forth." Yes, sure, there is some bitterness there, and I do I do feel bad about the abuse that I suffered while I was in the church. But you know, like I say, it's not my intention to bring down the church. It's my intention to.
But do you believe it anymore,
light.
Jeff? Sure. But do you believe it anymore, Jeff? Do you believe?
No,
so you don't
I
believe
don't.
Any of the Scientologist stuff?
No, not anymore. Not since I have had a chance to independently investigate it.
So if you've independently investigated it, you've been abused by the organization, you've seen the dirt underneath the carpet, why wouldn't you want to take your shot at taking it down?
Well, I would say this. My concern is exposing the abuse and criminality at the upper levels of Scientology. If Scientology doesn't survive that, then fine, then it didn't deserve to survive it. If it survives, I think it will because of good-hearted people at lower levels who attempt to put something back together. And I would have no objection to that. You know, Scientology, by the way, is practiced outside of the Church of Scientology by a number of groups, and I have no quibble with them.
Okay, you're going to have to explain that. I don't understand that one.
Well, it's called the Free Zone, and there are a number of organizations, groups, individual people who practice Scientology, and it's not condoned by the Church of Scientology. It's completely an independent operation, and it's not really organized. It's just a bunch of individual organizations and groups and this
okay.
and that who practice Scientology, and I say, fine.
They're
not abusing anybody.
Right, knock yourself out. Right, okay. So
So
now we're down into the fundamentals of, because I had Reverend Yvette Shank, the president of Canada's Church of Scientology, in the studio here, mm-hmm. and I asked her the questions, what do you guys believe, and what are you really all about? And at the end of the interview, I really didn't feel like I got a clear understanding of what Scientology is or isn't. Can you
right.
help me?
Okay. Yeah, basically, you know, they believe that a person is a spiritual being and that a person natively has a lot of spiritual ability, mm-hmm. but that ability is hampered by various factors that have, you know, come in on the individual over many, many lifetimes. And if you read Dianetics, they talk about engrams, you know, where, you know, you have an accident or you go unconscious and that lays in an incident that then hampers your spiritual ability. And they say, well, we'll clear all that out. And that's what clear is all about. They say, well, we're going to clear all that bad information, all those computer viruses in your brain, if you will. We're going to just clear all that out, and then you'll be totally able and capable. And then when you get to the upper levels, then they have they get into this whole scenario, which is very science fiction, of how this overlord Xenu took all of these spiritual beings and enslaved them and threw them into volcanoes, and that they are now attached to our bodies, and that's what's hampering us. And now they've got to clear away what they call the body thetans and get those all cleared out and so forth. And that goes on and on and on and on at these upper levels.
Which is why you need a million-year contract.
Exactly. You've got to keep clearing them away.
Yeah. And by the way, folks, we're not joking about a million-year contract. There is such a thing.
Billion-year.
Oh, it's a billion-year contract.
Billion-year contract.
My apologies. Let me just clear that up right now. Somebody else phoned in and wanted to know what Hubbard believed about Christ.
He thought that that Christ was an artificial incident that had been implanted in people 75 million years ago, and that it was simply being kind of played out in modern times, and that people were simply being re-stimulated by this old incident, and therefore they were saying, well, there's a Christ, and he was saying, well, there isn't. He said that very clearly in some taped lectures.
So he does not believe in the Hebrew Jesus who claimed to be the Son of God?
No, not at all.
This caller, they had questioned why the cross was part of the Scientology symbol.
It's an eight-pointed cross, and it's supposed to represent the eight dynamics or the eight parts of life, which are like, you know, self, family,
right,
group, et cetera, et cetera.
Right,
so
but why the cross? And my thought was, well, if you want to sell a new religion in the United States of America, you got to associate yourself with some kind of Jesus stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. He initiated that in Phoenix in 1954, coincident with making it a church, and started using that as a symbol, and I think it's pretty obvious he was trying to kind of take advantage of Christian imagery.
Jeff, what do you miss about being a Scientologist?
Nothing, really, except I had a lot of very good friends. Fortunately, probably 90% of them are also out of Scientology now, and we have a great time.
Wow, 90% of your old friend group who were Scientologists have also bailed.
Have also bailed, and we're in touch now. We have a chat group that's got a couple hundred members, and you know, a couple times a year we have reunions, and we have a great time laughing about the old days.
Well, I'm sure it wouldn't be all laughter. I mean, let's talk about the abuse you personally went through.
Yeah, yeah. Probably the most dramatic thing was that the leader of Scientology, David Miscavige, who I worked with for several years, physically beat me on five different occasions. On one occasion, he knocked me down on the floor. He punched me in the stomach. He hit me with the flat of his hand repeatedly on the side of the head.
Why?
Oh, because I had, well, as he said to me at one point, he said, "Do you know why I beat you up?" And I said, "No, sir." And he said, "Just to show you who's in charge."
Well, isn't that nice?
Wonderful, yeah. Wonderful. And ultimately, that's why I left, because I realized this guy was in charge. He was always going to be in charge, and I was not willing to be a part of a church that was headed by him.
Wow. And what about, you stated earlier your concerns with the abuse and criminality. Help me understand the criminality part of that.
Well, and other people know far more about this than I do, but there is it's a huge, huge money-making operation, and the local organizations who make money have to send the bulk of that to the international Scientology, and they keep very little of it locally, and then they amass it centrally at the International Scientology, at the international base. They have huge reserves, millions of dollars that they can then use to hire lawyers and private investigators to harass critics. And also, David Miscavige pays himself a six-figure income. And the average Sea Organization member makes $30 or $40 a week. And this guy is paying himself a six-figure income. He wears $3,000 suits.
He should be a televangelist.
It's exactly that sort of thing, yeah. He is living the high life off of the hard work of many, many, many people, and I object to that, and that's one of the things that I refer to as the criminality.
Where are you at now with the God stuff? Do you still believe there's a spiritual component to our life?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
So that's it. That's ingrained in you, and that's been there right from the get-go. It hasn't changed since you were 21, right?
Yeah. I am a very spiritual person, but I've never been much for organized religion, and my experience with Scientology has pretty much completely soured me.
I can imagine. I can totally imagine. So has anyone tried to sell you something new in the last 3 years?
No. And I don't think that they would have much success. I did have some Jehovah's Witness come to the door.
Oh, yeah, how'd that go? That would have been a very interesting conversation. Oh, my goodness.
I told them, don't even get into it, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's like a Saturday Night Live skit right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. You know, the thing that stays with me throughout your story, Jeff, is the sense of loss and rejection that you've really had to process in these last 3 years. And it's got to be overwhelming.
Yeah, it was when I first left the group. And, you know, you're convinced that it's you, that it's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And when I left 3 years ago, that was my mindset. I totally thought it was something wrong with me and the organization was justified in throwing me out. And it's really taken me 3 years to process that whole experience and realize that it wasn't something wrong with me. It's something that is wrong with the organization and the way they treat people.
Right. I have been to Jeff's blog, and let me just mention that again, counterfeitdreams.blogspot.com. counterfeitdreams.blogspot.com. Some fantastic reading there. Your latest entry, I mean, it's lengthy. Let's not get, the idea that it's just little snippets here and there. But the length and the attention to detail, either you're as nuts as Charles Manson or you really are who you said you were.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of detail to write. I was there for 35 years, so it is as detailed an account as I can make it.
Jeff, have they come after you? Because I've heard that many times from people firsthand that have said, I spoke out. I was then issued some sort of summons or threatening letter from the legal department at the Church of Scientology.
Yeah, they have left me pretty much severely alone. When I first started speaking out, I got some letters, and I told them sort of where they could put those letters and posted my reply on the Internet. So I haven't heard from them again. I think that, and I think the last thing they want is me in court, you know, frankly.
Because you've got enough dirt on them.
Yeah, because of what would start coming out about Miscavige and so forth, you know. So I think their strategy, for whatever reason, is to ignore me.
All right. This radio station primarily has Christian format, and so that means there's a lot of Jesus people that listen to the station.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that you want the Christian population to understand about Scientology? Now, I understand primarily your mission there is to especially help those that are in the lower levels of Scientology that have no clue what goes on at the higher levels to wake up and smell the coffee. But what about the Jesus people?
Well, they should understand that Scientology is not their friend, because Scientology makes a great public show of being, you know, well, tolerant of all religions and standing up for all the rights of all the religions and so forth. That's terrifically self-serving on their part. All they're trying to do is to create a sort of safe place for themselves. They have no respect for Christians, in actual fact, and Hubbard has no respect for Christian religion or theology or anything like that. So Christians should understand that regardless of the public face, Scientologists are not their friends.
Do you think Scientology, Jeff, do you think it'll die?
I think eventually it will. I think that they can keep up a public facade for many years, probably.
We touched on this earlier, and we're just about done, Jeff. I really do appreciate your time. By the way, I want to thank Dr. Jim Beverly for putting the two of us together. What a great guy he is.
Yeah, he is. He's a great guy.
Jim and I, in September, in Season 6, will be speaking with one of the top guys at the Mormon Church down in the big temple down in the States. So we're looking forward to that. But right now, on the phone with Jeff Hawkins, former Scientologist leader, spent 35 years working for the Church of Scientology all over the world and at all echelons, including the top level at Scientology International Base in Hemet, California. And 3 years ago, Jeff left. And now when we say he left, I mean he left. He left his lifestyle, his friends, his wife, everything. I can only imagine the turmoil that you must have gone through during that point in time. We've talked a bit about that. But let's go right back to the history and the very, very beginning. We touched on it earlier, but something in the back of my mind says spaceships and aliens. And I hesitate saying that because when I mentioned that to Reverend Yvette Shank, president of Canada's Church of Scientology, might I just say, very lovely lady, very, very warm. I really liked her. I don't remember getting a clear answer to that. I think it was sort of sloughed off as, oh, that's just sort of nonsense.
Yeah, they're not allowed to talk about it.
Oh.
At her level, they are absolutely forbidden to talk about it. They're even forbidden, if they're not up to the level of OT3, they're forbidden to read the material, even if it's been repeated in a, like on South Park or in a newspaper article, they are forbidden to read that as a Scientologist. So lower level people in Scientology who haven't reached OT3 don't know about it. They literally don't know about it. So when you start talking about it, they go, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, so what are they talking about? What, is there such a thing as the beginnings of Scientology involved aliens and spaceships and stuff, or no?
Well, that is the crux of the level that's called OT3. And when you get up to that level, you find out this whole piece of writing by Hubbard and lectures where he describes 75 million years ago how people were trapped on this planet, and there's a whole incident. You can read the whole thing these days on WikiLeaks. But like I say, the rank and file Scientologist who hasn't reached the level has never read that.
But is that material not public?
It is now, but not because of the church. It's public because people have put it on WikiLeaks and put it on various other sites.
Right, right. Now, you mentioned the word forbidden, and I keep thinking, okay, well, if you're forbidden to do something, the only reason you're not going to do it is if you're afraid of the punishment. And actually, that's not even the only reason. I mean, you look at the Christians, and, you know, there's a moral code that we're supposed to be abiding by, and many of us slip and fall, and many of us just flat out embrace stuff, and we have tough times and dark times and whatever else. But we're never threatened. Well, not sorry, I shouldn't say this. There's the odd whack job group out there within the Jesus scene who do threaten with social outcasting. But you guys take the cake on the social outcast thing.
Oh, totally. Totally. If you speak out, and this is getting more and more repressive as Scientology evolves, but if you speak out against the church, or if you do anything that displeases the church management, you're out. And you are declared what they call a suppressive person, and you are forced to disconnect from anyone you know who's still into Scientology. They're petrified that people are going to talk the subject up and criticize it publicly and so forth. So they want to cut you off from the faithful.
Wow. It really is phenomenal. And you know what? I'm still, at the end of this conversation, Jeff, you've been tremendous. You've helped me understand a little bit more, but I'm still thoroughly confused. I think it's the most confusing religion in the world, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, I think you're right. And it's because it's so shrouded in secrecy and levels of secrecy that no one has the full picture. You know, the local Scientologist that you talk to, she doesn't have the full picture, not by a long shot. You know, so you get conflicting accounts depending on what level the person achieved, both in terms of echelons of management and in terms of the progress up their spiritual scale.
What is the Scientology system of ethics?
It's very...
Is this another confusing answer again?
we could have a whole show just about that.
Really?
But, yeah, it's a very, very controlling system, and they believe that any criticism is rooted in a person's own transgressions. In other words, if you're critical of Joe, it's because you have transgressed against Joe. And that just gets taken to an extreme that you wouldn't believe, so that if a staff member or a C organization member becomes critical or questions or anything like that, they're immediately hauled in for what's called security checking, and their crimes are pulled, and they have to confess to all of their crimes until they recant the critical statement that they made. So it's a very, very heavy form, really, of mind control.
I have read through the Scientology website and the answer to the question, what is the Scientology system of ethics? And again, unbelievably convoluted.
Yes, yes.
Like, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I can get most stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This is just unbelievable. And their concept of God, again, just to clear that up before we go, is?
Really, they say that that's up to the individual. And I was talking about the dynamics earlier, the eight dynamics. Well, the eighth dynamic is called the Supreme Being, and Hubbard pretty much refused to make any statement about that. He said, it's whatever you find out about that.
I wish you the best, Jeff. If you ever come to Toronto, Dr. Jim Beverly and I will take you out, and love to have you on the show in person and have our callers call in and ask you questions.
Great.
What's the future hold for you, Jeff?
Future's looking great. I have my own business, and I'm doing very, very well. And I have family around me and many, many friends, and
good.
So it's good. Life is good.
Good for you, mate. Good for you. Jeff Hawkins, former Scientologist leader. You want to go to his website, counterfeitdreams.blogspot.com. counterfeitdreams.blogspot.com. Tremendous writing. You're going to need to grab a coffee and sit down. These are not little short snippets, but phenomenally interesting. And I appreciate your heart. Jeff, thanks, mate.
Well, thank you, Drew.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Short break on the show. We'll be right back.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.